Good morning, everyone. We're just hanging tight for a few more minutes while everyone else is joining in. Please feel free to sign on, make sure your audio settings are correct, and we'll join very shortly. Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining in. We're just going to wait for a few more minutes for a few more folks to join in, and then we'll get started. So please hang tight. And if you need anything in terms of water, things like that for the session, please feel free to grab it now. And for anyone who's joining in, please make sure to have your mics muted and your video off for the duration of the session. Thank you.
I don't hear anything. I don't hear a thing.
Good morning, everyone. This is Ram. I'm a youth committee member at the Hindu Temple in Bridgewater. Thank you all for logging in this morning. And I know that the process of folks coming online will continue for a while, but we will get started. We're at the top of the hour and we will get started. So a couple of things before I hand it off to Dr. May. Very quickly, this is a session that we're conducting on college selection and planning. And several of you had kind of questions. You had a choice of topics that you kind of shared with us. We have all of that data aggregated by the levels of interest in each topic. So thank you, first of all, for signing up. We have had 250 registrations for this session. The breakout is among 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, with the top statistics belonging to the 10th and 11th graders for 11th graders for obvious reasons. But once again, thank you for signing up. And a couple of quick things, housekeeping. As has been announced earlier, this is an hour-long session. Dr. May will be the only speaker. Once I finish this, I'll hand off to Dr. May for the rest of the time. And please ensure that you are on mute during this entire session. Also, please do not turn on the video. And one other thing, we had also shared a link to a form where you can type up questions. That form is actually enabled now. So as Dr. May starts off and talks through the various topics, you will certainly not have an opportunity to present your or pose your questions during this session. However, the form has been enabled so that you can actually go online, click on that link, and enter your questions. And those questions will be compiled by us subsequently. And we will either do an email Q&A response, or if the questions are overwhelming and we're able to classify them, we will actually request Dr. May to host a session just for Q&A. So no questions, once again, to be asked on this session, but please go ahead and click on that online form that we provided for the questionnaire, okay? And we will follow up back with answers. That said, very quickly, I would like to introduce our key speaker, Dr. May, and we are thankful to her. She has done these sessions for several times for our youth, and we are thankful again to her for agreeing to do this session. And she is a college graduate school and career counselor. She's got a doctorate in curriculum and teaching with the highest honors from the Teachers College of Columbia University, Master of Arts from Columbia in childhood special education, and a Master of Education in Learning Disabilities. She's certainly been counseling and coaching several youngsters for a long, long time. So the very interesting facet is she wants to keep it conversational. She always picks and chooses case studies or use cases that she can always tap into for examples. The key thing for you all is, while this is not a session where you can ask questions, we will certainly send out an email giving Dr. May's contact information. Our email will be shared with you all. Feel free to contact her after the session and get in touch with her for any of your requirements. Lastly, this session is being recorded, and so we will also make available a link to this recording for a subsequent review for each of you. With those words, let me invite Dr. May to actually take over and conduct this session for us. Over to you, Dr. May. Thank you.
You're welcome. How do I make, do I hit this picture to get it larger?
Comes across pretty well.
I'm not quite sure how to do this right now, but here.
No, it looks good. It looks good. You may proceed.
Okay, great. Okay, I actually have been a college counselor since the 1980s. And I've worked with many, many children, different children. Some children that were academically inclined, other children that were very creative, some children that had learning differences, other children that were doing just fine in school and were headed off to becoming very productive adults. Everybody's different. One of the first questions that was given to me, and I'm a professor too, so I'm going to treat this as if I'm teaching my college class, was how do you prepare for college? Well, the general answer is you prepare for college by doing well in high school. And that's really the truth. The thing is, it's very important. Every high school is different, and every high school has its own curriculum. But yet there's certain standards that have to be met to succeed in college. And one that's really overlooked is how to develop study skills. There used to be a class that has since been cut where children learned how to take notes. They learned how to study on their own without their parents hovering over them, without having tutors in every class. They learned how to be self-sufficient learners. Of course, they can ask for suggestions, but the most important thing in preparing for college is that a student learns how to learn. And how to learn takes a long time. Sometimes English teachers will approach that when they teach a student how to take notes, how to understand word derivations, to understand how to break down math problems. These are all skills that really help one prepare for college. And if not given in a school, because there are always so many other things that have to be done and so much time is wasted in schools, it's very important that students, to be successful and prepare for college, learn how to study. Now, the other thing that's very important is also to know what your school offers. School districts all have different offerings. They have different amount of AP classes. They allow AP classes to be taught in 12th grade. Some permit it in 9th grade. Some schools don't have AP classes. They consider every class an AP. They're IB classes. There's some schools that have one or two classes. It's very, very dependent on the school district. And so a parent and students really should make, if they can in 9th grade, make a whole listing of classes that they think will be beneficial to their particular student going forth. Now, it's possible scheduling won't permit that, but in general, most students need to have at least 4 years of a foreign language, and that's something that kids often say, I don't want to have a foreign language, or somebody, 4 years of math. The other area people often say is, why do I need social studies? Well, you need the 4 years. And then the other thing is that they're kids that I've worked with, kids that are artists, and they should start in 9th grade developing their portfolio, save everything. Same thing with kids that are in sports. A parent will come to me and say, well, my son might be, or daughter might be recruited for a sport. And they have a whole loose leaf or a file filled with what they do, so that later on that becomes part of their resume. It becomes part of their records. So in preparing for college, the most important thing really is to, first of all, do well in high school. Now, there are many kids that don't, that have problems with growing up. They're a little immature. They maybe have a teacher that they don't get along with one time. They change schools. That's fine too. But what one wants to see is that there's a progression, or getting, and that they realize and do better. It's much, for a child that does poorly or doesn't do so well in 9th grade, but then you see them going up in their grades as they learn how to study, that's fine. The most important thing is really to recognize who the student is and how they can best, in lieu of another word, market themselves. And there are kids that I've worked with in recent years that have had series of concussions or illnesses. I've had kids that have been out of school for cancers or other kinds of conditions. These things happen. And what's most pivotal is that the person has self-motivation and a desire to go forward, and that they're realistic as well. Preparing for college should not be what you do in high school. It should evolve, because when kids start thinking about college all the time, and a lot of times kids in the last, I think since about 2008, kids have started thinking, where am I going to go to college? Where am I going to go to college? How am I going to be able to do it? College is so expensive. I can understand that. And people don't want to graduate and have no work, which has happened to many kids. But on the other hand, they should learn in a structured way so that when they're ready to go on, they can achieve without being totally burned out, because we see so many kids that are full of anxiety, and the anxiety is not healthy. The kids that are on medication, and they really fall apart, unfortunately. So encouraging good study habits and taking as best you can the challenging courses, and not letting the courses run away with you. When you need help, go speak to the teacher. A very important thing in preparing for college is not to think of your teachers as an enemy. If you feel, someone will say, oh, it's the teacher's fault. That's all the time the teacher's fault. Talk to that teacher. I'll tell a student, go in early. See if you can make time. Now, sometimes that doesn't work, but it's very important not to allow the students' emotions to run away with them, because there are always going to be situations that are not particularly advantageous. And in terms of preparing for college, college is not a panacea. You take courses that you might find the professor, you might find the classes are too large, you might find you don't have the same, the way the teacher teaches doesn't work with your learning style, but you have to learn, you have to adjust, and you have to hang tough. And the most successful students are the students that ask the strong questions and that also reach out for help. No one is going to know that you need something. If a kid needs something, if they're sitting in their bedroom playing a video game, or if they have their head down somewhere, you have to be proactive. And it's the same thing in terms of preparing for college. That's a long-term process. Colleges are all different, and you have to, and scholarships are few and far between. And so one has to also look at what they can afford, what's available, and know that what you bring to a situation is what you get out of it. And so there are many colleges that will help many students and will offer them an opportunity to succeed. Kids succeed in every environment when they have the study skills, when they are mature enough to buckle down and do well, and when they ask for help. And so in looking at colleges, it's important to be curious and also not get carried away with ratings, which might not be accurate. You know, when you dig deeper into the ratings, they don't really talk about departments. They basically, and a lot of them have been known to be bogus. In fact, some colleges step out of ratings. And what does a rating mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's how somebody is going to do in a specific situation. So in terms of looking at colleges, what I've done for many years is I read about the colleges. I see who the professors are, when they went to school, where they went to school, what they've published. It's really important to find a compatible place where a student will find their people. I was talking to a young man the other day who's applying for college in this most difficult year with COVID. And the student is a very social kind of a kid, very, very academic, speaks several languages, and is really has a lot going for him, has taken summer courses at colleges, and really knows himself well. Now, there are two colleges he's looking at, and one of them is a really fine, wonderful school, but it's known for having kids that are more introverted and who are less likely to reach out. Well, this kid is garrulous and he's full of energy, and the other setting would not be happy for him, and those qualities that he has would not thrive there. And so it's really important to understand who the school serves. Will this person be happy? Is it a diverse environment? What is the curriculum? It's a process, and there are lots of ways of doing that. The college websites are wonderful places. And so preparing for college is a study. It's a study of what a college offers. If a student is interested in, and there are many different things. If a student is interested in engineering, most high schools don't offer engineering or pre-engineering courses. good thing to do is to go to a summer program that has an engineering program, because they don't know what engineering is. And if that is unaffordable, see if one can do a shadowing at an engineering office, or have speak to a parent who's an engineer. Because kids, they only know what they think they know. And they think of I'm going to be a mechanical engineer, or I do robotics, so I want to build, or I'm going to do, what else am I going to do? Let's see, I'm going to do electrical. But there are many, 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 many fields in engineering. So I what I do with my students, if I'm doing that kind of career prep, is that we look at what they are. And you can do that by looking at the different engineering programs that are offered in schools. Like, for example, one of my students several years ago is an engineer at University of Michigan. And she was interested in neurology. And she wanted to combine neurology with engineering. And there's neural engineering, not in many places, but we found it. And so it's an important thing to weave looking for colleges with the range of what's offered within a discipline. Math, data analysis. What is data analysis? What is actuarial science? What do you do to become that? This is all career preparation. And these are things that you're not going to get in high school. So they either come by going to a summer program, if that's it. And I'm not even sure that that's the right thing to do. When I say a summer program, every single college offers on-site summer programs, and so do high schools. Now, some of them are 1 week, some of them are 4 weeks. There's scholarships available for these programs. And these programs, most of them you can sign up for in January of the year before. Now, this year, everything is online because of COVID, and some courses have been canceled. And it's a good thing to do, actually. Usually people go after 10th grade or perhaps 11th grade, and it can be from 1 week to 8 weeks. Most programs are not, they're expensive, not necessarily so hard to get into because pretty costly. And some do have scholarships. And they also, if you're interested in a particular college, by going to a summer program, that's a way to prepare too, because you can see if you like it. Now, they're also a way to find out about careers. Like, for example, I know that most of you live in New Jersey, and your state colleges have some amazing programs for kids that are really very keen in math and can do well. Now, some of these programs require a test to get into because you have to be very advanced, but these are all good things, and they're all preparation for college, because as long as you don't put stress on it and it becomes something interesting, if you you want to find out, like, for example, what's the first year like at certain colleges? If you go to a technical school, you're studying a particular subject, do they introduce you to different disciplines within it? If you're a business major, people think they want to do finance because that's what they know. And do they know what finance is, what finance leads to? So preparing for college involves a lot of conversation. The same with science, because somebody who is interested in science doesn't know the range. Biology's broad. And I think it's a great thing to do in your own home, to talk about what you can study with biology and also psychology. People want to be psychologists. What's biopsych? What can you do with computers and psychology? There's so many different ways of preparing for college and also doing career prep. And the other thing is, there's always a lot of stigma. People say, oh, in preparing for college, you can't be a humanities student. Yet, from my experience, humanities students sometimes end up really thriving because they have a wonderful educational background. They can read, they can think, and thinking is one of the best skills you can develop if you're going to go somewhere far and wide. And so the liberal arts education at some very challenging schools and state colleges can be excellent preparation. It really depends on the particular student and what their interests are and not forcing them into a direction where they're not going to succeed. Now, the other thing is that I've worked with many kids that are also interested in art and in theater and in music. And that means developing portfolios. And quite frankly, some of the hardest programs to get into are writing programs. There's screenwriting programs, there are programs for creative writing, and the students that prepare for those programs have portfolios that are like 30 or 40 pages. And they're so competitive, the same with any film program. You really have to start saving things and making your own films. People who are in creative arts, that's how they prepare for college. They make films. They really get involved as a kid. It can be in their own house that they're doing things. And another, in preparing for college, something that's often overlooked is work. Kids are so busy getting ready for things and are so fed and so spoiled that they don't have jobs. And having a job really develops discipline. And I don't mean a job that the parent develops, if possible, which is, again, hard during COVID. But to have a job, a work job that they've kept for 4 years, huge, or a business they started, be it dog walking, be it mowing lawns, be it collecting wood piles, or actually working, actually working in an office. There are people who work in an office. Great things. The same with preparing for college with internships, if kids can get into hospitals. Now, and more than just transporting, doing things, there are kids that have worked with actual with doctors, and somebody last year saw a baby being born. Now, people asked about COVID. This is really, really hard because kids that are in 11th and 12th grade, the 12th graders don't know whether what's going to happen with their college at all. Lots of kids accepted a school and then they said, maybe they're not going to go because it's too far away. Maybe they're going to take a gap year. Maybe go to a community college. By about July 1st, most colleges in the next few days will be telling students what's going to happen. It's a very, very tense time. And I honestly don't know the answer because there's so many different answers. There are kids that have been, I'm sure many of you have read about, that are Division I athletes that have been sent home because they developed COVID. When they come home, they're bringing the virus with them. Who knows who they live with? Very challenging. And professors, there are many professors who have an age where they have to be hyper careful. And for the juniors, it's really tough because the juniors, many of them signed up for the March SAT and the test was canceled. They have another test coming up. Some kids took all their tests. They can't visit schools. They're doing Zoom meetings or they're doing virtual tours, which are not very good. What I'm having my kids do is join the mailing list from all the colleges they're interested in and try to get in touch with the local representatives. The local representatives are people who are assigned to your district. And if in fact they're in office, I would suggest emailing them and saying, my name is so-and-so, send a copy of your resume and talk to them about what to do. It's very, very complicated. I think that the juniors applying for college now have to do clean, strong applications. I've been talking really, really in touch with my kids to make sure that they feel secure because there's a lot of anxiety. Their dreams are being shattered. And parents don't want to pay a fortune to have to be online. And online learning can be wonderful, but it also takes special talents to be able to capture people, capture students. And many professors are not used to teaching online and really are unaccustomed to technology. It's very, very complicated. I think we probably have about 18 months from what I've read of this situation. So it's possible the class of 2021 will be able to go on campus, but I really there's no guarantees. And so the best way that students who are applying for college now is really to make sure their resume reflects them, that their common application, the either common application, coalition application, is very clean and neat, that they really don't rush it. When they're doing, for example, putting in their activities, make sure that the activities are clearly articulated, and that when they write their own personal statement, which was another question, the personal statement is the so-called college essay, and that is not meant to be a regurgitation of a resume. That's meant to be a story, something about, that tells you something about the applicant that isn't really seen on a resume. And because there's plenty of time in the activities and also in college supplements to talk about achievements or resume type or why you want to go to specific school. So the essays this year, I think, will be important. But I, with COVID, it's really, really hard to say what's going to happen. And some right now, the schools I talk to, some kids are given the option of staying home. Others are going to schools where there'll be singles or one or two people in the dorm. It's not, it's nothing, nothing is final because so little is known about the virus and its ramifications. I've been also, for some kids, I've been suggesting, you know, people wanted to fly far and wide for college. Maybe that's not such a good thing now. Maybe it's important to be closer to home so that families can be in touch in case there's any kind of emergency, if in fact they can be in touch, because some of the schools that are thinking of opening are having an infirmary on campus. Very, very complicated. And I think that the most important thing, I think, is to prop up the kids because they really, you know, this is a lifelong dream for families, and then everything to be so radically changed is really incomprehensible. Okay, how to build a strong target list of colleges. Well, that, to do that, to build a strong target list is really reading about the colleges and knowing the departments that they have and being flexible. A strong target list includes some state schools. It includes some private schools. You don't want to have 18 or 20 schools because there's no way you can learn about the schools. And it also includes developing relationships with the schools and going to visit them. Now, since people can't visit, it means contacting the schools, making yourself known as best you can. If you don't visit the schools, it looks like you're not interested and you're just picking something off of a book. It's so important to see a campus if you can. And look at the cafeteria. They used to say the cafeteria and the library, the most important places. Yeah, it's really crucial to go visit a school. See what the environment is. Some schools have sleepovers. And to have a sleepover is a great thing. You have to reserve it in advance and go online and look at it. And if you're interested in a particular school, it's good to go to the summer program there, if possible. You just don't want to do random. A good target list is a target list where you know your schools, where you have a range of schools, and where you're open. And also financially. This year, somebody lost a job and someone did an early decision school and they simply couldn't afford it. So they had to renege the early decision, which is binding, and they're going to a school where they were offered a huge scholarship. Now, it's really crucial. I mean, people get all crazy about reputations, but that it's the reputation of a school doesn't mean anything if a student is going to be a number there and not going to have attention. You want a student to be in a place where they're going to be recognized and where they'll have a chance to build up a portfolio of experiences which will give them the tools and foundation that they need to succeed in life. And that doesn't mean, I mean, this whole thing with Ivy League schools is nuts because there's hardly any places, maybe 5%. And so if somebody comes to me and they have 9 Ivy League schools on their list and they won't budge, I know that they're going to be disappointed. Most people. Usually a student who's an Ivy, and I know who an Ivy League candidate is, who's an Ivy League candidate might get into 2 if they're lucky, or 1. And this is a candidate. So when somebody, and are they going to do well there? Some people do. Some drop out. But the fact of the matter is that I don't know where this Ivy League schools were only the first, some of the earliest schools. Certainly Stanford is in an Ivy League. University of Chicago is in an Ivy League school, nor is Northwestern, you know, or Wellesley. So it's all relative. You want to find wonderful schools where the curriculum is rich and where the student can thrive. I had an experience with a parent this year who was so keen about that. And her daughter was in a very rare area where there are not many kids, musical comedy. And this mother who came in with a list of schools that you would never think of. And it turns out that one of the schools that the girl was accepted to has the best, you know, a wonderful, wonderful musical comedy program where, and that's what she wanted. So you really got to research programs and research where, and now, and then again, if you don't know specifically what an interest is, then a liberal arts background is wonderful because you learn how to think, you've got interest, introduction to different disciplines, great books. And the other thing is that to build a good target list, you want to look, this is in non-COVID days, you want to look at other parts of the country. There are amazing schools in Ohio, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Gosh, they're fabulous. And in fact, there's a whole cluster of schools, which they call Ivy League, that are in that area, or mini Ivy, like the mini Ivies. They're great. The same with down south. They're wonderful, wonderful schools. And so don't be in a little box thinking your target list should be 9 Ivy League schools, and then you include Carnegie Mellon or whatever. You know, be flexible about finding a range of schools, and always make sure that you have your state schools, because your state schools, and be happy with them usually, the state schools are great, because you want to make sure that you're as happy with your, excuse my dog, you're as happy with your schools that are so-called safety, nothing is safety in the world, but your so-called safety schools as you are with your REACH schools. That's a really important thing to do. How to avoid anxiety in the process. How to avoid anxiety in the process is by loving the study, really. Kids that love to study, ask questions, and also when their parents are realistic. When a parent knows that it's not where you go to school, but you're a level of self-confidence, curiosity, and initiative of what takes you far, and where they don't put inordinate pressure on a student is where the anxiety is diminished. And also, if you teach a child not to fall into the prey of having their classmates create an atmosphere that's tense, or a teacher, it can happen in schools too. It happens often with classmates where they're mean kids that hide from what, who like to make others nervous. I think it's a good idea to tell kids, don't, let's not talk about colleges. Let's make this an at-home discussion, not talk about it with your friends or other people. Let's just keep it quiet. It's something that it's between us. And please don't share with friends. And they're very helpful because you avoid anxiety by not throwing yourself into a situation which exacerbates anxiety. It's like common sense. And so basically one of the best ways to avoid anxiety is to not permit it. And you also can make it kind of a game. When a student, if a student is given a strong foundation and they're curious about learning and they know that going to college isn't the be-all, end-all of life, their life is just beginning, and they're healthy, it makes a huge difference. And that's up to families to really engender that kind of environment by really appreciating the individuality of each student and finding out things that are special about them and nurturing those qualities. It's a tremendous help if a student has self-confidence and from the time they're young have a realistic perspective. If they know they've done their best, they're a strong worker. They know that sometimes you get what you want, sometimes you don't. Life is like that. You're not always going to be pandered. You're not always going to be getting your way. To engender those qualities really diminishes some anxiety. And also, sometimes it's really good for somebody to have a mentor or somebody who's an older person who's been through it to talk to and have that person really help, or maybe it can be a sibling, because anxiety really gets in the way. And also it really is a big problem during the college admissions process, which you can have a kid that starts out so strong. And then when the amount of work can be prodigious unless you do everything in a very organized way. For example, once you do have a target list of schools, you make up a spreadsheet with what they cost, what the population breakdown is, have all that information available, have individual files made up for each college. Each file should include supplemental essays if you can. Open up your common application early, it's available. From the time a child enters high school, stay on top of things. And that really helps. Organization is a very important thing. Be very organized. So then you can do everything in steps. You develop your target list in 11th grade, visit colleges starting in 10th grade, make a second visit, have your target list pretty firm by 11th grade if you can. And then towards the end of 11th grade, you start to write your essays. Another thing is a lot of essays are done in school. And that's something I personally, this is my personal opinion, are against. I'd rather have kids be reading in school and writing, because personal statements sometimes are private, and also because they're different than high school writing. It's something that also takes time away from learning and study skills, which I started with. So I think that it's very important to be very organized in the college process, and that relieves anxiety, and also keeping it to yourself is a really important thing with preparing for college. Extracurricular activities. Extracurricular activities should include work. And it's not the amount of activities, it's the consistency of activities and the interest. If you have a whole laundry list of activities that you just did in the 12th grade, I mean, what is that? It's not meaningful. And if you have community service, but the community service, I've seen a lot of people who do community service projects in India, but they should be doing the community service project in Trenton, because it's just done all the time. You want to see something that's real. For example, somebody volunteered at a veterans home and they did this in sixth grade. Somebody else is playing music to seniors, but they've done this for years. Somebody else working in a communal, a food garden. These things, what you want to see with extracurriculars are that they're very consistent and that they are something that somebody really, really likes. Another thing is that it's well known that people who play a sport are in marching band or in plays can't have that many extracurriculars because those activities are time consuming. And oftentimes people who are athletes do some coaching for kids, which is very helpful. So with extracurricular activities, they should be things that are interesting to you. And there are some kids that have tremendous energy and they're involved in a million things, and that's who they are. And it doesn't tire them. They love it. They land with their boots on every time. And that's who the kid is. It's very dependent. However, I have to say that one thing, there's a lot of robotics now, which is also very good and can be great. But it's good to have a balance of some things that require active participation, like a Model UN, and robotics is building, if in fact you want to do that, or to have some balance in activities. And it's nice to have something which is an involvement in your school, if you can. Now, there's some kids who actually have to work at home because they have to take care of a sibling. And that's highly respected by colleges because that, or they have to take care of a parent. I've known kids whose a parent might have a cancer, and this particular kid had to be home with the parent. These things happen. Life happens. And so with extracurriculars, the most important thing is that they're something that engages a student, something that they love. And one thing that I advise not is don't invent a club for the 12th grade because you don't have any extracurricular activities. That happens all the time too. There's millions of things that just pop up later on, and it's not going to help anybody. Okay, another question was extracurricular a statement a student focuses on. I think somebody wanted to know about a successful personal statement, and I mentioned that before, that a successful personal statement is something about their own history that really inspires and helps students. Now, I don't know, college, when you're thinking about college, another thing is that if for people thinking about graduate school, if you're a business major, someone was asking me this week, and it might be helpful, if somebody's a business or an engineering major undergraduate, you probably wouldn't want to do that major in graduate school. Or if in fact you were going on to business, you might want to do a different aspect of business, because there's no reason once you have one degree to go on and do the exact same thing later on. For example, some people might major in biology and then take biology and then get an MBA in business. They're very varied. Another thing I'd like to share is about people that want to be physicians. If you're interested in being a doctor, being an occupational therapist, physical therapist, or any of the those fields, and you have AP classes, please take the class again, because the AP is not really preparation for what you're going to meet in the MCAT or in, you need to have the class. And that probably will be advised to you because the APs are high school classes. It's great to get AP credit, and you don't need thousands and thousands of APs. Some people come in with 11, 20, I mean, so many APs, I can't be 20, but a lot of APs. And that in the end, I mean, it takes time away, but why rush your life? Because you're going to learn something different in college classes. And college, the idea of college is to learn in a collaborative way and to learn how disciplines interweave with each other and to develop cogent statements where you can be a thinker. Because if you're a thinker, then you can go on and be a leader. And there's no reason, I mean, people rush high school enough in for preparation for college. And college, it should be a truly a place where you have dialogue, where you're really able to sit down and people can express different ideas and come up with synthesis, or you can work in the lab and research. I mean, for me personally, and I really encourage students, is to look up professors when they're going to college. Find somebody, write to them. See if you can work with them from the time you get into college. See if you can spend time working with a professor. Or if you're in a communications field, see if you can spend time with the radio station at that school, or find out who's doing the films or sports. There are people who are very interested in sports-related fields, and if they go to a Big Ten school, see if they can sit in with the games, if in fact they're played. Right now, of course, we're not in a position to do that. But you really, college is the time to grow up and to really integrate your earlier life into the new life that's coming forth, and not to rush. And high school is a time for learning, for developing a background in disciplines, and in taking courses which provide a gateway to your future and introduce you to a wider world than was prevalent before, which also has to do with thinking. And your thinking becomes more and more abstract as you go along, and you're more able to develop a hypothesis, your own hypothesis of life, which is why it's so really important not to rush high school and to really dig into what you're learning. And to take that to the next level and to keep on progressing as you learn more and more about how to put together your education in a way that's productive and really challenges you to develop a more interesting life. What else do people want to learn? A statement, a successful student. Well, no, this is wrong. A successful statement doesn't focus on what a student did in high school. That's what your resume does. A successful statement focuses on a story. As example, somebody wrote about the veterans home I mentioned, a successful college statement. They worked in a veterans home, and prior to working, volunteering in the veterans home, they were very interested in military history, and they really believed in heroics. And they got to speak to a veteran of Vietnam. And at the same time, they were reading a book called The Things They Carried, which talked about what people took into war in Vietnam, what was in their pack, and how their pack told the history of their life. And what they learned from speaking to the veteran, who happened to be an African-American veteran in a VA home, was that that sometimes the infantry were cannon fodder, that in fact they were, which brings forth All Quiet on the Western Front. And so in doing the story, the student learned something about the infantry. They learned about who a veteran was, and they broadened their experience. That's a personal statement. That's a very successful personal statement, because it told a story from someone's life that was very important to them. Someone else told the story of volunteering at a hospital, and they were asked to come in to see a baby being born, which is amazing. And they saw a deus ex machina, they saw a life. So no, a personal statement is not what you've done in high school. I've been fabulous. I am the president of my class. Mm-mm. No, that's in your resume, and it can become a laundry list then. No, the personal statement is something that defines you, and defines you. I knew somebody, another personal statement I knew years ago, someone that actually went to an Ivy League school, was they wrote math problems, and their math problems, they were an SAT tutor, and they turned in math problems and they solved them. I mean, I don't think that can be done now, because the whole process was different. But that was something that they had done. Or somebody else told about being the only girl in a statistics test in a very uptight school in New Jersey, and how it felt. She won, but how it felt with all the, you know, there weren't many girls in her class and how it felt. So, it's not a resume. It's something that really defines who you are and makes you different from other people. So to reiterate from the beginning of what I said, the best preparation for college is knowing what your school district offers by reading their curriculum. It's very different from one place to another. Knowing whether they have honors classes, whether they separate the students or not. I personally, unfortunately, a lot of kids burn out in high school, and I would rather have a kid have the opportunity to take strong classes if possible, not necessarily APs. Do they have to have all AP classes? No. But also you should know when classes are available to students. One of the local schools only offers AP only in 12th grade. So you have to know what this is and when to take classes. The same thing about standardized tests when they're given. It's possible the subject tests are gaining more precedence because they show what somebody has learned in school. And they can be taken quite early. But what you don't want to see is somebody who's prepped for the SAT since they were in the seventh grade. And as people have probably noted, SATs are no longer, many schools are not even counting them because they'd rather look at what someone has done in high school and because there was so much over test prep. And so know what your school offers. Make going into ninth grade, make a whole outline of what courses to take. Make sure you have the requirements to go to college, which means not dropping out of a lot of kids only have a foreign language in eighth grade and in ninth grade, even though that looks like maybe it looks like 2 years or 3 years. You really need 4 years of high school or 5 years of foreign language. And you need that in a citizen of the world in any case. And make sure that you know that you really have very good record keeping. Hold on to papers that you've written. Make sure clean out, don't throw out. Make sure your computer is really organized. Kids are really sloppy. I would go through things and have lists of ninth grade readings, have everything organized and start organizing very early on. This year, in terms of colleges, you have a lot of decisions to make, whether kids should go far away or because of COVID or stay closer to home where they know the environment. Those are really important things to consider. And also, you know, just keeping eyes on the news and deciding whether it's better. I think a gap year is great, but not necessarily this year because, I mean, people have already been home. For kids going into 12th grade, should they defer? I'm not quite sure unless they have something to do. I wish there were really concrete answers about what to do about COVID, but they're not. The other thing to mention is that all kids are different. Honor their differences, nurture their talents, and challenge them. And then I think you'll have successful preparation to college. I think that's about all I have to share right now.
Great. Thank you, Dr. May. Greatly appreciate those views. And once again, just reminding the youth and their families who have signed on to actually please go to the link. We see these questions actually coming alongside. And so please keep sending them along. And note that the link to the form itself is going to be kept open till end of day, June 30th. So you have until end of day in June 30th to actually send in your questions. And I kind of see that the questions have started coming in. So, you know, send them across. That's awesome. We know that these are exceptional circumstances. COVID-19 has clearly introduced a lot of uncertainty for many facets of life. But hopefully this one-hour session with Dr. May kind of shed some light on some broad aspects or topics that you guys chose. Keep the questions coming and we will kind of compile them. Please be patient. We will obviously try to see how best we can organize answers. And if it makes a more practical thing for us to organize a follow-up session with Dr. May, just to kind of have a Q&A, we will do that as well. And please be mindful when we share the contact information of Dr. May. Her time is valuable. She is a counselor. She does provide counseling. So, you know, if you do need to reach out to her, just make sure that, you know, you consult with your parents and then you please do contact her. And so other than that, I think we are done for this session. We're going to wrap it up now. And we, again, thank you sincerely for joining in. You all take care. Please stay safe, stay healthy. And Dr. May, thank you once again for your time. Greatly appreciate it. Have a good rest of the afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.